Welcome to The Romantic Side of Suspense with Sarah Hemmerker. In each episode, she'll talk with your favorite romantic suspense authors. They will take you behind the scenes of the writing process, giving excerpts from their writing, and share stories about their writing life.
Traces by Denise Wymer. When a failed romance and a $500,000 prize lure Kate Carson into participating in the reality TV show Traces, the least she expects is to pick her partner. After all, she's the PR spokeswoman of the company that derived a 13-lens rotating camera for military use and installed it atop Atlanta's tallest skyscraper. But she never would have chosen to evade techno hunters for 20 days with G.I. Joe. Stoic ex-military Alex Mitchell is the sort of man she always vowed to avoid, while the shadows of Alex's past cause him to spurn emotional involvement. When Kate's insider knowledge makes her a target of someone more threatening than game show hunters, Alex offers her only hope to reveal the dark plans of proponents of the Eye.
Hi, and welcome to this episode of The Romantic Side of Suspense. I'm your host, Sarah Hemmerker, and I'm so glad you joined me. Today I have with me Denise Wymer. She writes historical and contemporary romance and romantic suspense set in her home state of Georgia. She's authored more than 10 novels and a number of novellas. And her new book, which is going to be out in March, is Traces. So welcome to my show, Denise.
Hi, Sarah. Thank you so much for having me today. I'm excited to speak with some of your readers.
So, as romantic suspense novels, I'm often asked as a romantic suspense author myself, why romantic suspense? I mean, you know, besides that, it's like one of the most popular genres out there. Hello, people want romantic suspense. But why did you want to write romantic suspense?
Well, I kind of stumbled onto writing romantic suspense. As you mentioned in my bio, I started with historical. And I actually started writing romantic suspense for my Restoration trilogy, which came out a few years ago. And it was a time flip series, but the main story was modern. And I had characters who were doing a restoration on a historic doctor's house, an apothecary, and a log cabin during the trilogy. And they began to uncover secrets from the past. And so the mystery became whether those secrets from the past were the things that were putting them in danger in the present, or if there was also a threat in the modern day. So that kind of launched me on sort of on the genre. And then Traces is my first full contemporary romantic suspense novel. And it came about when my publisher and my agent suggested I try something just a little bit more modern or edgy. And there were two pieces that came together that brought about the plot for Traces. And the first one was I had watched a reality TV show called Hunted. And it's a British show, and it only aired one season here in the U.S., but it so happens that they had done the filming right here in Georgia where I live.
Wow.
So that really caught my attention. And in the show, it's a group of volunteers who are trying to evade a team of highly skilled fugitive hunters, and they're very skilled with technology and surveillance. And I really like the idea of them trying to stay off the grid for this to earn this cash prize. And seeing, you know, how resourceful they could be when you can't use traditional means to get money or travel from place to place. So that kind of captured my imagination. And then the second piece of inspiration came along when I read about Samara, which is a wide area motion imaging system. It's a mouthful. But it was developed by the military, and they used it from planes to detect threats on the ground in Iraq and Afghanistan. And then I was fascinated to learn that it had been adapted to survey the Rio Olympics.
Oh.
So I thought, you know, they say suspense writers always think it, or writers in general are always saying, what if?
Yes.
I thought, what if a system like that was put on top of a skyscraper in Atlanta? And what if a woman who worked for the company that helped develop it was put on such a reality TV show? And then she discovers she's in real danger, not just from the TV show hunters, but from somebody who wants to silence her because she knows too much. So that's how Traces came about.
Yeah, it's funny. My first romantic suspense was for love-inspired suspense called Dangerous Christmas Memories. And That was actually based on a news article that I read, a little snippet about a celebrity who had done one of those drive-through Vegas weddings and didn't realize that that was an actual legal marriage until like 20 years later.
What?
They were too slow. They had kind of gotten married, I guess, as a joke. I don't know. Weird things happen in Vegas. But
yeah.
You know, so, and I was like, well, what if this happened and then the heroine lost her memory of actually getting married, and then she had to run for her life, you know, because she saw something. So that was, it was fun because I was like, oh, it was actually a real thing. People, you know, they didn't actually forget, the celebrities didn't forget they got married. They just didn't think it was real. Then I thought, what if you just didn't remember? And then she like disappears into witness protection. And so the hero can't find her until he comes across her years later. But anyway, it was just those, I love those kind of, you know, what if scenarios and how they kind of just really fire our imagination. Right. And just, but then we take it on this like kind of dark turn, You know, someone's trying to kill her. Well, that doesn't really happen all the time in real life, but I think it's kind of fun to use those kind of real life situation.
For sure. Yeah.
So what do you think is the hardest part of writing romantic suspense?
I think it's actually kind of what we're talking about with all the what ifs. Like, those can be inspiring, but you have to like think them through like the reader would, and make sure that your character's actions are believable. And I think that's even more so in suspense or a mystery than in just romance. So, you know, you want your reader to be reading and not to stop and say, well, why didn't she just do this? You know, you want the choices they make to be the most believable path that they would follow in the story.
Yeah, right. And haven't we all watched a TV or a movie ostensibly based like where we live? And you're going, that would never happen. You know, and now you're mad.
Yeah.
You know,
hard to know all the possible outcomes or all the details that go into any situation.
It is, but sometimes the more obvious ones, like I live right outside of Washington, D.C., and sometimes they'll try to show people getting from, you know, say the Capitol to Arlington in literally like 3 minutes. You're like, never in a million years would that ever be able to happen.
Yeah. Right.
Or they'll use the metro system, except our metro system is just little. It's not like, and it'll look like the subway system in New York. I'm like, no, our train, no. They can never do that. So
that's where that research comes in, isn't it?
It does. Mm-hmm. And again, that's where our, you know, some other readers come in too, like our beta readers. These are people who may read our books before we send them off, because we want to make sure that all those threads are realistic and, you know, that our characters are doing things that, while our readers may not agree with them, at least they're very plausible.
Right. Yeah. Yes. I always like to at least try to visit a place where I've set a story, even if I typically like to write in Georgia, because I'm familiar with so much of the state. But if I set something somewhere else, I really try my very best to get there and visit. So, needless to say, I haven't ventured outside the Southeast with my settings too much.
Right. Yes. And, you know, it is hard, I think, to pick locations. It's good. I've tended to right now. I'm the same way, Denise. I'm kind of writing around, you know, in the greater Washington, D.C. area, because that's what I'm familiar with. And there's a lot of, you know, good possibilities and for plots and stuff around here too. I can add that local favor, like for my Dangerous Christmas Memories, I had a local friend read it. She goes, oh, it was fun to see read a few of the spots. You know, she could recognize some of them, even though I like made up different names and stuff. So that was kind of fun. You know, you don't want to use probably real businesses if you can help it and that sort of thing. So you don't want anyone, you know, thinking, oh, I can't go to that coffee shop because I might get shot at. Probably not the best thing, right?
Right.
So what about, you know, your titles for your books? I mean, I don't know about you, Denise, but titles are hard.
They are. They definitely can be. My favorite thing is to name a book based on a theme, an underlying inspirational theme or spiritual theme, or character development theme in my books. But I sometimes also will like choose the name based on maybe a big event that happens in the book. I have another book coming out in March called Spring Splash, and it's contemporary romance or sports fiction. And Spring Splash is the name of a big swim meet that takes place at the end of the book. And that one is about an injured college swimmer, and she falls for a special needs swim team and their coach. And it was inspired by 15 years of being a swim mom and also a local special needs organization. So I just kind of wanted to capture like kind of the feel good, warm fuzzy sentiment in that book, with a title that sounded bright and cheerful. So I came up with Spring Splash, and it so happened that I also went along with my fall release, which was called Fall Flip. So they just kind of sound good together. It's sometimes about the way it sounds.
No, I like that. I like that. You want it to evoke something about your book. I mean, you wouldn't want to put Spring Splash on your romantic suspense, I don't think, because
No,
that's a little too
no.
cheerful. You're like, well,
Wrong mood.
somebody's trying to kill her. I better not call it, make it sound like some, happy time.
Yes, and for Traces, the name of the show, of course, the reality TV show, is Traces, and at the beginning of the book, it's explained, how we leave traces of ourselves everywhere we go, whether through DNA or surveillance technology, records that we leave behind us as we travel, and how hard it would be to live and exist for any length of time without leaving traces of yourself somewhere, especially in today's world. So that's how that title came about.
Yeah, and I think that's, it is kind of fascinating to think about how often, we are tracked and
Oh,
traced.
yeah.
And, for years, my husband and I didn't have smartphones. We finally caved last summer. And I have two teenage daughters who don't have smartphones. That's a whole nother story. But, and I just was, people were like, oh, well, they track you and they do things. We're like, not us. We have our dumb phones here. Let's, try. So now I'm like, okay, turn off the location, do all this stuff. Just to, for, we're just a little on that, better be safe than sorry kind of, for leaving your digital footprint everywhere you go. But yeah, for, to try to do that, really. So did you try to do that? Now I'm curious.
No, I didn't actually. Just inspiration from the show and research, about how that might best be done. And I was really surprised by some of the things, the ways that you can be tracked, and it's ways that you think you can't. For instance, in one of the early scenes, the heroine, I think she's done a really good job because before the show started, she mailed letters to her contacts, like a web of contacts within the area. They have a certain perimeter they can't go outside for this, game show or reality TV show. And she thought, okay, well, I've got these people set up ready to help me. And her partner, who's a lot more wise to that sort of thing, in the game, he says, you send it through the postal system, don't you know they take a picture of every letter that is sent out? So she, all those contacts were null and void, basically, and she couldn't call on them.
She probably should have hand delivered them, right?
Yeah, I guess.
For your next time, if you're ever on a reality show, just, don't send anything to anywhere because it's tracked. And then you wonder why the post office loses mail. Okay, this is what I want to know. If they take a picture of it, how do they lose it? All right,
That's a
maybe
really
that,
good question.
yeah. Maybe that's a question for another book. But right now, unfortunately, we are out of time, Denise. So thank you so much for being on my show today.
Well, thank you for having me. I really enjoyed chatting with you and talking about traces, and appreciate it.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure as well. And listeners, you can find out more about her book and Denise in the notes attached to this podcast. So thank you for joining me again.
Thank you.
You've been listening to The Romantic Side of Suspense. I'm your host, Sarah Hammerker, and today I've been talking with Denise Weimer. She writes historical and contemporary romance and romantic suspense set in her home state of Georgia. And we've had a wonderful conversation. I hope you've enjoyed it, and we'll talk to you next time.
Now an excerpt from Traces by Denise Weimer. Perspiration beaded under her navy suit despite the brisk wind scouring the 55-story building. Kate clasped shaking fingers over the small manila envelope in her blazer pocket. She had to get the flash drive it contained to the one person she could trust, Amber Lassiter. Hemmed in by other journalists, Amber typed on her iPad, her brunette bob obscuring her face. When she glanced up, her gaze fixed on the mayor as his voice and fist pounded out his indignation.
"Every month, criminals prey upon the weak and indigent. Families can't walk through Centennial Olympic Park at night. And the bombing outside the Fox Theater, a deed which has now been claimed by a radical terrorist group, destroyed the security we thought we'd created."
Framed against a stomach-clenching backdrop of Midtown, visible through plexiglass and steel rails, the tall, sandy-haired politician opened his palms to the press.
"Last fall, my election platform called for stronger city security, an increased police force, and getting the homeless, especially vets like myself, off the streets. As many of you know, I've long been a supporter of the surveillance products engineered by Survey Corp. But the eye above Atlanta, derived from military cameras flown over Iraq and Afghanistan, is like nothing before it. Surveillance begins now, with a new era of freedom and safety for Atlanta's citizens."
As the crowd applauded, Mayor Barnes indicated the area behind him. The hum of a powerful engine vibrated the cement floor. Straining for a better view of the emerging machine, the journalists stood. Armed Survey Corp security guards dressed in black tightened the perimeter. As she'd hoped, Amber glanced her way with a grin of anticipation. As discreetly as possible, Kate waved the manila envelope. Not discreetly enough. Kendra swiveled her dark head, and Kate fumbled to slide the envelope back into her pocket. Surrounded by a host of videoing, photo-taking journalists, all intent on the round black camera extended on its pedestal under the skyscraper's massive spire, Amber furrowed her brow. Survey Corp's president, Justin Sandler, took the podium. After allowing only a few questions from the Atlanta Journal-Constitution and local TV stations, he thanked the press for attending and informed them that they would be first to exit. G.I. Joe, Alex Mitchell, she corrected herself, held open the stair door nearest them. Kate hurried toward the departing journalists. Amber looked back at her. Raising her hand, Kate made a C. Confidential, their childhood code that one of them had a secret to share with the other. Hand on his comm, Alex approached Kate.
"Survey Corp employees are to use the other stair."
Nothing about him indicated that he remembered their elevator meet-cute. She tried flashing a brief but hopefully dazzling smile. "Hi again. Kate Carson, remember? I need to talk to my friend a minute." She tried to press past him, but he blocked her.
"My instructions are to ensure the press leaves without mingling."
"Why?" Behind mirrored sunglasses, Alex's face remained impassive.
"Miss Carson, I don't have time to argue with you. I'd rather not have to force you to go."
"Force me?" As Kate looked over his broad shoulder, Amber got swept along in the current of journalists heading to the stairs. Kate let out a growl of frustration and jerked her chin up. "Be assured, I'll report this to the head of security."
Alex Mitchell fake grinned. "I'll be in my office tomorrow morning to receive your complaint."
Fury and embarrassment sent heat rippling over Kate's cheeks. Whirling and stalking away, she headed for the employee stairs, intent on retrieving her phone from her office and setting up a meeting with Amber. Two men wearing earpieces dressed in black barred Kate's path. She threw her hands up. "What now? I'm an employee going back to my office."
"No, ma'am. As of this moment, you're on the run. Hand over your cell phone."
The Uber dropped her off at the park entrance. Kate darted past trees greening with tender spring toward the lake. Construction signs and tape cordoned off the arched stone bridge, probably a ploy by the TV show to keep the public at bay. She kept running past the street lamps, across the bridge with black metal railing, onto the white column gazebo jutting out into the lake. Ducks quacked under a weeping willow, but the gazebo sat empty except for two backpacks. One belonged to her. Hopefully, the other was Lance's. Kate knelt next to the unfamiliar bag, unzipped it, and rifled through. Two-way radios, a Coleman first aid kit, Sawyer insect repellent, a compass, a map, a GPS. Those could be his, as could the 75D polyester V-chamber sleeping bag that inflated with a dozen breaths but packed to 3 by 8 inches. Lance had told her he owned one when he advised her to purchase the same kind. Nothing like toting around a big bedroll to flag you for surveillance, he'd said. She didn't recognize the clothes. And face paint? Shoe polish? And what was that strange blanket that reminded her of balloons?
You!
The indignant male voice caused Kate to drop the crinkly material. Standing at the gazebo entrance, breathing hard, was Alex Mitchell. She stood up. Why did you follow me here?
I didn't follow you. I was told to come here. Why are you going through my backpack?
Because I expected it to be Lance's backpack.
Is this some kind of PR stunt?
Alex Mitchell took a knee, stuffing the Mylar back into the knapsack and jerking the zipper shut. He muttered as if to a higher power,
Please don't tell me she's my partner.
I'm standing right here. She jammed a hand on her hip. And if there's anyone who should be angry, it's me. I was all but guaranteed that if I signed up, my brother, who's an officer with Gwinnett County, would accompany me. One side of Alex's lips quirked up as those dark brown eyes speared her.
That butt will get you every time.
Thanks for listening to The Romantic Side of Suspense with Sarah Hammerker. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave a review. You can sign up to receive notifications of upcoming podcasts and listen to previous editions at sarahhammerkerfiction.com.